Welcome to the Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee. The pace will slow down a little bit this week from last week. We're going to start off with a public hearing on Senate Bill 2353. Linda, if you could give us a
Certainly.
Summary while Representative Dunbar comes up.
House Bill 2353 changes the name of the program from the Oregon Career Readiness Certification Program to the Oregon National Career Readiness Certification Program, NCRC. Clarifies the requirements for obtaining services from NCRC. Expands NCRC services to provide assessments, instruction, and remedial training, and to inform school districts, educational service districts, community colleges, and community college service districts about the program. Requires community colleges and districts to report student use, participation, and enrollment rate to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senate colleagues. I'm Michael Dembro, State Representative for House District 45, that's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And it's a real pleasure for me to bring this bill to you. It passed unanimously out of the House Higher Education Subcommittee. And it does a number of great things. It moves Oregon farther along the road towards performance-based education and really sets us up for workforce development for the 21st century. It follows up on legislation that came out of the House Workforce Development Committee from the 2009 session, and it affirms and furthers Oregon's participation in the Career Readiness Certificate Program, which is now the National Career Readiness Certificate Program. The NCRC is a wonderful public-private partnership that allows students, employees, and job seekers to be nationally certified on their skill level in applied math, reading for information, and locating information. Those who take the tests can have their skills certified at the bronze, the silver, the gold, and now the platinum level. Oregon Workforce Department professionals work with employers to determine and advertise the skill level that they need for their vacant jobs, help match up job seekers with vacant jobs, and advise test takers on classes that they need to take to get their skills up to the next level. The tests are nationally normed, which is great for employers and employees alike. Employers know how their employees stack up against workers all around the country, and employees are able to take their certification with them wherever they go. The tests and counseling services will be available at community colleges and WorkSource Oregon locations all around the state. Funding for the program comes from Federal Workforce Investment Act dollars. House Bill 2353 adds a uniquely Oregon wrinkle to the national program. The Higher Ed Subcommittee added amendments that would encourage school districts and community college programs to use the NCRC as a way to test the proficiency of their students in the three skill areas. At least one school district in the state, Reynolds High School, has decided to make success at the silver level a prerequisite for high school graduation. This bill will encourage school districts to do that kind of thing, to set up best practices which gauge students on their skills, not on their seat time. This is education reform that works. In sum, colleagues, Oregon's NCRC brings together the various local and statewide infrastructure of our public education and workforce services with Oregon businesses of all sizes that are determined to grow and succeed. That's why it's a priority project for AOI, OBA, the Manufacturing 21 Coalition, Oregon Business Council, Oregon Business Plan, the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, the Community Community College and Workforce Development Department, Northwest Natural, and PCC Structurals, all of whom are its primary sponsors. So, colleagues, I urge you to join all of them in endorsing this forward-thinking legislation. And if what I said isn't good enough for you, Cam Preuss will close the deal, I'm sure. But I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Michael, could you give us a hypothetical how this will work if it's passed and, you know, in the real world, real kind of like the real situation?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Cam can go into more detail on this, an employer has a job opening, and if the employer is part of this program, say it's PCC Structurals, they'll advertise the program as needing somebody who's at a gold skill level, okay? And then people will have gotten that level of certification, so they, you know, they have their certificate. It's a gold certificate, and WorkSource. I believe that their names will be available then to WorkSource Oregon offices to link them up in that way. I'm not sure if that's exactly how it works, but that's the notion. People who have certified at this level of skills will be matched up with employers who have that level of need.
Questions?
I'm wondering who's doing that linking. Is that somebody at the school, or is it somebody at Who's actually doing the linking that you mentioned between the person at the level and the business that has the need?
That's an excellent question that I would ask that you defer to Cam.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Denbrough, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Cam Preuss.
Our apologies. We just realized that our copy machine copied these all cattywampus. So I have four that we have not fixed beautifully.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Camille Preuss. I'm the director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And I want to first thank Representative Denbrough for his ongoing support and championship of the National Career Readiness Certificate. I'm going to describe what the certificate is, but first let me tell you that the legislature passed a bill in the 2009 session, and they tasked the department with building what was then called the CRC, the Career Readiness Certificate. And so we have actually been doing that since the fall of 2009. So this will also be a bit of an update about how far along we are in that process. Part of the reason for the National Career Readiness Certificate, you'll see, is we're anticipating that with a slow recovery in our economy, I think Employment Department Director Lori Warner will tell you that there are 6 applicants for every occupation, and the reason that we have the adoption of the NCRC is to enable job candidates to be able to get a leg up, if you will, by having a certified set of skills for those job openings. I'm on page 2. The Career Readiness Certificate is nationally recognized. It is a tool to certify an individual's skills in 3 very important skill sets that employers across the country have identified. It is, as Representative Dembro indicated, it is a public-private partnership. It also helps employers when they go to hire someone to know that an individual has a certified set of skills. This isn't an Oregon-grown test or assessment. It's nationally benchmarked and normed. If you look at the next page, there's a map of the United States, and it shows you that over 30 states have adopted the National Career Readiness Certificate as of January of this year. So Oregon is one among many that wants to be able to prove through the certification that individuals have the skills they profess to have. The way the National Career Readiness Certificate was generated was really in response to employer needs. Many of you on this committee will recognize the initials ACT. They are the foremost testing and assessment company, primarily for high school students who want to go on to college. But many employers said an ACT assessment is important, but we really want to know what skills and what level of skills individuals have in the workplace. And so ACT developed something called Work Keys. And Work Keys is an assessment that measures work skills. They couldn't just say, well, these are the skills for every job. So they had to do an additional step, which is called profiling. We are currently in conversation in a real-life example with Solar World, speaking with them about profiling their frontline occupation so that when they want to hire someone, we will know what skill level is necessary for their operator positions. So the National Career Readiness Certificate is based on three core assessments. And so the next page talks about the three different, what I call skill families, that are important to employers. Reading for information, applied mathematics, and locating information. And these three skill families are then assessed, and you wouldn't expect that an engineer would have the same level of math, of applied mathematics, as you would expect someone who is working perhaps at Solar World in an operator level. And the assessments and the profile will actually tell you what the differences there ought to be. So the certificate assesses those three skill areas, and then it certifies them in four different levels: silver, bronze, gold, and the newest level is platinum. And you can see in this particular matrix that the skills that are demonstrated at these different levels cover different families of jobs. So you can see that the bronze level is level 3. It covers about 35% of jobs, and there's a listing there of what those job types might look like, up to gold, and gold is level 5. Gold is also the level that if you were a high school student and you wanted to test, or if you wanted to show that you had reached an essential skill in math, a gold level will do that for you. Gold level in reading will also is a proficiency level for reading in the new diploma requirement. So it was very intentional that the certification levels that are in the NCRC have applicability to both students, high school students, college students, as well as workers. And there are any number of community college career and technical programs that also require a silver or a gold certificate in order to advance to the next level of education. Page 7 is just a picture of what the certificate looks like, and you will notice in the middle of the, at the bottom, in the middle of the page, there is a certificate number. Now, these assessments, and yeah, it's pretty small, but, and the issue date. Every certificate does have its own identification number. These are proctored assessments. So when I sat for the exam, I had to put in my number, and my assessment came back with my number attached, with my level already attached, so that Sally couldn't sit for me, who is a real brainiac in math, and I'm not. And so the certificate is numbered for very practical reasons, so that both an individual and an employer knows that that certificated skill really belongs to me and not to someone else.
Excuse me, Kim, how is this certificate different than the ones Intel requires from the Rock Creek PCC instructional? They have to get a certificate of some sort. Are we talking a whole different thing?
Chair Haas, yes, it is markedly different. The Intel certificate would be one that is built, was likely built at PCC to be responsive to Intel as an employer and has more specific skills to Intel. These are more generalized skill and skill levels.
Well, on that note then, are there other kinds of Intel certificates out there?
Chair Haas, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Like the Intel certificate that we're talking about. Is there one for Solar World? Is there one for bakers, candlestick makers?
Legislators. Chair Haas, it's a good question. There are, I guess the short answer is yes, there are certification levels for nursing. There are boards that are required for nursing. But there are lots and lots of jobs where there is no either industry or board or other kind of certification. And our the reason I believe that the employers that have gotten on board with the NCRC is because they don't require a particular level of post-secondary education to fill that job, but they want to have some certainty that the individual who comes to them has a level of skill that they can count on.
Well, just devil's advocate then. I mean, I agree with this concept, but if we have other kinds of certifications and then we have this one,
mm-hmm.
And then ultimately we have an associate's degree.
Yes.
Aren't we kind of, what do we have just all kinds of different levels of expertise or just, not sure, it sounds like there's just a lot of places where one can be certified and
Chair Haas,
short of a degree.
Yes, you're making a very valid point. As I said, there are some community college career and technical programs that actually embed the NCRC as a step toward an associate's degree, so that if perhaps we might wish it weren't so, but many individuals don't start at a community college and 2 years later finish with an associate. Sometime in there they go off and get a job. And for them to have this level of certification is at least something to hang on to and move and have, and they can come back to college and continue with their associate degree. But there are also a good many individuals who have not been in school for a long time. I mean, we have 200,000 individuals who are currently unemployed, and to answer Senator Bonamici's earlier question, how would someone get this? This is available through all of the WorkSource Oregon one-stop centers, and there are 40-plus offices across the state where you can, if you come in, you have a resume, that says you have work experience. The NCRC is to say, I have experience and I have this level of skill that has been credentialed or certificated, where a diploma or even an associate's doesn't necessarily say that you have a particular level of math. And that might be important to certain employers. But I certainly take your point. I actually think a proliferation of certificates would not be a bad thing, so long as there's a nesting that occurs and they aren't just willy-nilly.
Okay. Mr. Chair? Thank you. So you might be getting to this. I didn't read ahead. But if somebody, say somebody walks into the WorkSource office and says, I'm really interested in getting this certificate, but I'm not sure if I'm prepared. Do you have courses or some way to prepare somebody to take this assessment so they know that they're going to be able to succeed?
Chair Hass and Senator Bonamici, yes. We have been for the last almost 2 years been assessing individuals when they come to the One Stop Center with a short online assessment that assesses these same three skill areas. And if an individual scores at a certain level on that initial assessment, they are encouraged to then come back and sit for the formal certificate. If they test or assess at level three or below, then we encourage them. There are online tutorials to build individual skills in these three areas. So there's a way to move them on quickly if we think they have the skill, and a way to build their skill if they don't have it.
Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Anyone else here to speak on 2353A?
Mr. Chair, and I apologize for denying a quorum.
But yes, that's okay. Group. We'll close the hearing on 2353 and excuse Senator Morris and Senator Bonamici. I think it's a good time for you and I to get some of those bills through that we've.
I did figure out, though, Mr. Chair, when Cam said that this is called the National, to add the National so that it wouldn't be called the CRC, because that has a new meeting now. Distinguish it from the other CRC.
All right, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2029. Linda?
House Bill 2029 requires the transfer of student education records to administrative office of the school district in which the charter school was located when the charter is terminated or charter school is dissolved. Applies student education record statutes to public charter schools. Declares emergency. It's effective July 1st, 2011.
And we have Cindy in the department.
Cindy Hunt, Oregon Department of Education. The bill that's before you today came out of an ongoing investigation between the Department of Education and the Department of Justice into the Ed Choices Corporation and the All Prep family of charter schools. I believe this is the first time I've testified about the investigation in front of this particular committee, and so in the written testimony I've given you a bit of background about that. The investigation is still ongoing and involves 14 different charter schools and 8 school districts. At the present time, 5 of the original 14 schools closed, and the remaining schools are all under new management from the time that we implemented the investigation, so that's worth noting. But a couple of the goals from the investigation were to allow the students to continue in the least disruptive manner possible their education, and to hold accountable persons and entities that violated the law, but also to identify holes in the law. And so that's what 2029 is. But one of the events that gave rise to the investigation was that the schools were essentially mismanaging state school funds and federal grant funds. So as part of that, they ended up being evicted from 4 private facilities, one of which was in Clackamas, was 3 stories tall, I would say probably at least 3 dozen offices. All of these schools were virtual schools, so their administrative offices were all at Clackamas. That's important to understand. When the director was evicted, the schools and the management did not secure the student records that were at these facilities. So at the time of the eviction, there were 1,391 enrolled students, and Oregon Department of Education stepped in and attempted to get the student records. Also, at the time of the conviction, schools were in disarray and did not have really the ability to step in and transport the records or even assert themselves legally. Because after the eviction, what happened was we also then had other parties involved. There were not just the schools, but there was the private corporation, the corporation's insurance, the insurance company's attorneys, and the landlord. Eventually, to acquire the records, the superintendent of public instruction issued an order against the private corporation, and we went in on a Saturday with moving trucks and literally hauled out the records. To give you a picture of what the records look like, though, yes, there were some in file cabinets, but they were strewn about the facility. You know, walking through the facility, you would pick up a record that would have a student's name, maybe their social security number, maybe a picture. And so that's what we did to secure them. So we took them back to the Department of Education and proceeded to organize the records into a manner so that we could transfer them to wherever the student was getting their education from. When we took possession, we think there was about 10,000 records. We know that there were some from Washington schools that we transferred and worked with Washington on as well. And I'm happy to report, as of a couple of months ago, all the records are now out of ODE and where they need to be. Now, to explain what's in a student education record, there's transcripts, educational placement information, maybe the fact that the student is on an individual education plan. So during the time period that we had the records, we were receiving requests for transcripts so that students could get into college, so they could graduate from high school, so that their new education providers could give them appropriate special education services. So as part of this, and in working with DOJ, we discovered that in Oregon charter school law, while the FERPA, which is the federal student records law, does clearly apply to charter schools, the state student records laws does not necessarily apply to Oregon charter schools. So what 2029 does is apply Oregon student records laws to charter schools. It also says when a charter school closes, those student records are transferred to the school district where the charter school is located. We think that will enable students to be able to find their records in years to come. And with that, in closing, I would like to add that the investigation, like I said, is ongoing. We anticipate additional administrative, legal, and possibly additional legislation coming out of this in future dates. But at this time, without the conclusion of the investigation, I don't think I can say anything more about that. So with any questions?
Senator Bonamici?
I'm just, I guess, wondering why we didn't catch this in the charter review work group.
Chair Hass, yeah, Senator Bonamici, the Charter Review Work Group, I believe, I'm trying to remember if it started in May, and about the time that it started is when we were in Clackamas taking possession of the records. And so I think they were kind of starting at the same time, and I think I did circulate this legislation to the Charter Review Work Group for review when we had it composed. And I didn't get any comments from the group. So they were at least somewhat aware of it.
Could you comment more on the personally identifiable student information?
Yeah, Senator Hass, that personally identifiable student information is things like a student's name, their social security number. It can be their secure student ID number, an address. It can be a student's characteristics sometimes. And so what the expectation is for an education provider, just to give you an idea of what the Department of Education did with these records, is they're supposed to be in a fireproof lock safe. Only those education personnel who have a direct responsibility or need to access records are supposed to have access to them. So, for example, at the department, when we took possession, there was only three staff people that had a key to the room where the records were at and had direct access. I did not have a key, for example, because I did not need direct access for my daily, you know, duties to each of those records. And so the personally identifiable information will be held, like, in the physical copy of the record. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the references to landlords were changed
Yes, Chair asked, the original bill had references to landlords. More and more what we're finding, especially with charter schools and also in the area of private career schools, is that they're renting from private facilities. Most of the time, you know, when a school moves from a private facility, they move their records with them. But in these cases, there were three different landlords who did evict folks. The landlords in all three instances, I want to say, worked with us. We've removed the landlord sections from the original bill because of concerns raised by those groups. And I believe I have an agreement with the landlord group to continue working with them on these issues because we anticipate additional situations coming up in the future with more charter schools and private career schools renting from these private facilities.
Okay.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak on this? Thank you, Cindy. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 2029, mm-hmm. and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2282. Linda.
2282 requires residential facilities to provide educational services to children under 21 years of age, declares an emergency, be effective July 1st, 2011.
Okay. Bob, would you want to testify on this?
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, my name is Bob Junda. I'm the Director of Disability Rights Oregon, and I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 2282. Disability Rights Oregon became interested in the issue of children in residential care and treatment facilities receiving adequate education services as a result of calls that we received from parents and facility operators, actually, who had children placed in their facilities, particularly those who were placed under private health insurance. In other words, their stay was being paid for with private health insurance. And they were unable to assure that their children were able to access education services in that facility or to use the local school district in order to obtain education services. As a result of that, we've worked with the Department of Education to try to resolve some of the problems that that created an inability for the facility to assure that those children received adequate services. The crux of the problem that we ran into was that while children who were under state custody in a facility were guaranteed the opportunity to access education services through the local school district, this did not pertain to children who were placed under private insurance. And so in some cases that we saw, children were actually receiving tutoring in the facility by facility staff that did not have any certification or experience in terms of providing education. Obviously, this was not a satisfactory situation for anyone involved, and that prompted us to work with the Department of Education on this problem. This resulted in two bills, one before you, House Bill 2282, and what we consider at least a companion bill, House Bill 2281. And what House Bill 2282 before you says is that if a child is in a residential facility, and that could be a facility that serves children with mental health needs, children with developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, children with physical disabilities, or children receiving substance abuse treatment inpatient, that the facility, as part of their licensure, would be required to certify that they have a responsibility to assure that those children receive adequate education services, whether they be a child who's identified as having a disability or not. The companion bill House Bill 2281 goes a step further and addresses another issue, which is that of making sure that there's a mechanism for payment and assignment of a child in a facility to the local school district so that they may receive educational services. For that reason, we're supporting both House Bill 2282 before you and also House Bill 2281.
And so right now we're talking about insurance companies in 2282?
That would be 81. Sorry for the confusion, Senator Haas. The bill before you, House Bill 2282, just addresses the licensing requirements for a residential treatment or care facility. And this would place within the licensure agreement the requirement that the facility ensure that, that children who come within the care of that residential facility should receive appropriate educational services. And that, I might add that in our view at least, that is in accordance with federal and state law having to do with special education for those children who are entitled to special education services.
I'm trying to figure out who would pay this extra part of that extra education. Who's on the hook for that?
On the 2281, as I understand it, before we were able to work out some resolution of the problem, what was occurring was that it had to do with which school district was responsible for providing the service, so that if there was a child, say, that was in the Beaverton School District, and they and their parents placed them using private insurance in a school, say the Corvallis School District, Beaverton School District was still the district that was receiving funding and responsible for providing services to that child, even though the child was placed out of district.
Up through age 18?
Yeah.
Okay, and so this would change that to be 21?
The 21 is the as I understand it, again, this is not my complete area of expertise, but is that this would follow the child through the period in which there is an obligation to school provide educational services. That, and again, I apologize for confusing the two bills because we're talking mostly about a bill that is not before you today, 2281. But in that other bill, what it does is it just assures that the Department of Education has the authority to shift funding and responsibility for education to the district where the child is placed for residential care.
Okay. We don't have 22.
We do have it now.
But okay, we didn't have it when this was scheduled. And therein lies the problem of trying to make sense. Why don't we bring those both back together next week?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have some more members here and take it up again. Okay?
Great.
Thanks, Bob. Well, committee.
I thought there was a group of cheering people behind me.
Yeah. All right, we'll take that up again next week. And I'll close the public hearing on 2082. And committee, we are adjourned.
Can you answer my question?